I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a critical case before the U.S. Supreme Court could help cities like Seattle deal with their homelessness crisis, whether they want to or not. Plus, yes, we'll discuss that disaster of a Washington State GOP convention. And California Governor Gavin Newsom's latest political ad is dishonest. Even for him. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Well, hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Nicole's giggling at me because we, you know, listen, guys, we're busy. You guys might know I'm going on, holy moly, especially after this weekend, a much needed vacation on Thursday. We're also moving studios. And so we've been taping and moving and just doing all sorts of things. And so Nicole's all stressed because we have a countdown to the show and it stayed at zero for like 20 seconds. But we're here. We're here. We've got a lot to talk to you about today. Yes, we'll talk about the GOP convention, which honestly, if this wasn't my job, I would have unplugged over the weekend and I would have absolutely stopped tweeting, listening, following politics because it was just so absolutely exhausting. But first, I want to talk about something happening at the Supreme Court of the United States today. It's incredibly critical. And it really could help, I guess, cities who are willing, help them deal with the homelessness crisis that many places are dealing with. I mean, particularly up and down the West Coast, and it's because of progressive policies that have somehow called it empathy to let people live and die in their filth and their addiction on the streets. A little bit of context, though. So for a long time, the Ninth Circuit and the West Coast has really been driven by when it comes to their policies around public camping is a decision out of Boise that basically said you can have ordinances that prohibit camping as long as you have shelter to offer that person. So yes, you can prohibit camping on public sidewalks as long as you have a shelter bed available in the moment for an individual to move to. And if they say that they don't want it, then you can force them to move along. So that's kind of been the driving factor and the precedents that a lot of cities in our area have been operating off of. Well, the question is, could that change? So the U.S. Supreme Court, this is from our friends over at Project Homelessness. SCOTUS is going to hear an argument starting today in a case that would not only impact cities within the Ninth Circuit, but across the entire country. And so what this has to do, and they give the context here, so I'll just read from Project Homelessness. Grand Pass, Oregon had a ban on public camping until a 2018 Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit decision declared such laws a violation of the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment and struck down the city's law. Grand Pass appealed, and it is now up to the Supreme Court to decide. The overturning of Grand Pass versus Johnson by the Supreme Court would be a great first step in taking back our lost inner cities. This is according to an individual with Project Homelessness. This, in turn, would clear the way for critical reforms like passing Housing Plus into law, which would repurpose funding for much-needed treatment of substance use disorders and untreated mental illness for people experiencing homelessness. So that's where this case arises out of. Grand Pass, Oregon, is it cruel and unusual punishment to tell people that they cannot camp? They can't be homeless, essentially, in public areas. And of course, there's a lot of people on the left who believe, oh, you can't just do that. You can't just tell people that they can't be homeless somewhere or criminalize homelessness in their view. And you know who's, I mean, you're going to see a lot from uber progressives on this as we await the SCOTUS decision. And you're going to hear a lot from the homeless industrial complex. Because if you give cities new power to crack down on these out-of-control homeless encampments, and I don't know, God forbid, have a carrot and a stick system where if people don't want to get out of homelessness, then they either go to jail or go to treatment, it's going to help the crisis. You know who doesn't want to help the crisis? Anybody? Anybody? The people who are getting money to keep the crisis in place, like the King County Regional Homelessness Authority that has wasted hundreds of millions of dollars on their approach, which we know doesn't work. And that's why all the money's been wasted. And we don't have a better homeless grasp on the homeless situation today than we did. And so they are tweeting yesterday, again, they didn't mention it outright, but that's what they're referring to. It says, arresting people for sleeping on the streets only keeps people homeless for longer. And it distracts from real solutions like those we see working in communities across the country. Let me just break that down for you. There's so much to digest in that moronic tweet. First of all, King County Regional Homeless Authority is an absolute disaster. But when they say that criminalizing people for sleeping on the streets only keeps people homeless for longer, what are you talking about? How can allowing cities to remove homeless encampments keep people homeless for longer? That literally makes no sense. And then they say it distracts from the real solutions, like those we see working. Nicole, have you seen, where are the real solutions that are working? What's the King County Regional Homeless Authority talking about? If you have real solutions and you've been hiding them and not implementing them, like, we need to have a conversation. Because I haven't seen any real solutions that have actually made a difference. And if that were the case, then you wouldn't be wasting hundreds of millions of dollars only for us to have a worse homeless crisis now than we've ever had before. And again, they don't mention here that this has to do with drug abuse, right? The vast majority of people who are sleeping in these encampments, they're not in the right headspace to make a decision to get off the streets and get into shelter on their own. If they were in the right headspace to make that decision for themselves, they would have done it. They wouldn't be sleeping in squalor in camps and in deep, dark wilderness areas and on sidewalks in the city core. So that's the fundamental problem with the left and the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's view on this issue, is that they fundamentally don't understand that it's a drug crisis and a mental health crisis, and that people who are living in these tents cannot, by and large, on their own accord, make the decision to turn their lives around. There has to be an intervention. And we've heard it time and time again from people who have been there. How is it that we can find so many formerly homeless people, former drug addicts, who will come on this show and explicitly tell us that the only thing that got them off the streets was being arrested? How Ginny Burton in Washington State, Tom, who we had on from California, we have had so many guests who explicitly tell us, and I have seen with my own eyes when I was a journalist, stories of success from formerly homeless drug addicted people, stories of success where the turning point for them was arrest. But you can't have that. Of course, King County Regional Homelessness Authority isn't going to support a situation where it's easier for cities to arrest people who are living on the streets and refuse to move, because that would actually help solve the crisis. And you can't stop the gravy train. The Regional Homelessness Authority doesn't want to stop the gravy train. So they're going to keep pushing real solutions, like leaving people in tents to die with a needle in their arm. Frankly, shame on them. And they put out, Nicole, can you put back up that King County Regional Homelessness Authority graphic? They talked about criminalizing homelessness makes it harder to escape homelessness. And they had this whole like secular? Yeah. No, what's the word I'm looking for?
Cycle?
Secular.
It's a cycle. Or...
No, why can't I think of this word? Secular? Cyclical. I mean, I'm sorry. Cyclical. Oh my God, I was like, it was one of those Brandy moments today. Cyclical. Holy moly. So this is their cyclical nature of it, criminalizing homelessness. It says homelessness survival tactics include using tents, sleeping in public, and occupying public spaces. And then they said if you get fines for engaging in survival tactics while already facing poverty, then that hurts you even more. Then when you can't afford to pay the fines, you get warrants and incarceration and a criminal record. What are they talking about? First of all, nobody's fining the homeless. Nobody's fining the homeless. And the homeless, I'm sorry, they're not going to pay them regardless. And no court in the city of Seattle, King County, Washington, is putting out a warrant to a homeless person who didn't pay a fine for living in a tent? What are you talking about? And then it goes on to say, oh, when you can't pay a fine and a warrant's issued, it makes it even more difficult to afford a home due to unpaid fines, a criminal record that hinders housing options. This is a totally made up fantasy world that they're living in, where it's like, I swear to God, what they see is like, oh, cops down with billy clubs beating homeless people out of tents and writing them, you know, $1,000 fines and throwing them in jail and putting warrants out for their arrest. That's not happening. We know that's not happening. They know that's not happening. But they don't want to stop the cycle of homelessness because it stops the gravy train from taxpayers. So this is what you do. When there's ever, and we'll get to more of this case in a second, if there's ever an entity that works in the homeless sphere, the taxpayer-funded homeless sphere, and they're saying what they think the solution is, the actual solution's the opposite. The last people who we should trust with what the solution is to solving a problem is the people who benefit financially from that problem existing. And that goes for a variety of things. I do want to note that Ann Davison, thank God for Ann Davison, the Seattle city attorney, she did write an amicus brief. This is from the Seattle Times. They did some reporting on this a couple months ago when we were kind of waiting for the SCOTUS to take this case and for the hearings to be scheduled. Seattle city attorney Ann Davison wrote an amicus brief in favor of review of the Oregon case, saying that the two decisions have paralyzed local communities' ability to address homelessness in the places where it is most acute. So again, and she's referring to the Boise ruling and then the ruling out of Oregon, really hampering the ability of cities to make ordinances that are effective, right? And I don't think anybody, SCOTUS is not going to rule that it's cruel and unusual punishment to tell people they cannot set up a tent on a public sidewalk. Not this SCOTUS, anyway. And that's one of the benefits of President Donald Trump's term, is like this SCOTUS would never make, I don't think, I could be wrong, a crazy decision to say it's cruel and unusual punishment not to let people camp wherever they want. And so the outcome of that isn't going to be a free-for-all. I mean, you're still talking about a SCOTUS ruling that is going to clear the way for cities to clamp down on homeless encampments. But the cities still really have to have a willingness to do it and to pass ordinances and to put them into place. But I do think San Francisco, man, that mayor, London Breed, she's had a complete 180. She's ready, I guarantee, if SCOTUS gives her more authority to go and do these things. And in Seattle, I think you're going to see that as well. But there's a lot at stake, and we'll check in with Andrea Suarez. She's been tweeting up a storm about why it's so important, you know, the outcome of this SCOTUS decision. Truly, it could change the landscape for how all of us, not just Seattle, not just Portland, not just San Francisco, but cities around those areas that are suffering the result of the uber progressive city core's response to homelessness that's now just gone out into all the other areas, suburban areas, and even rural areas. This is going to be a game changer if the ruling comes down the way I think it's going to come down. I think it could really be the saving grace for a lot of these areas of severe homelessness. So we will watch that. All right. Must we? Must we talk about the convention from this weekend? Man, I've been just, I'll tell you, 72 hours of absolute vitriol hurled at me by Semi-Bird supporters. I said in a speech about a month ago that Semi-Bird was present for, like, look, I'm not going to waste more precious time attacking Semi-Bird. The real villain here is Bob Ferguson. And I'll support anyone who makes it past the primary to go against Bob Ferguson. Anyone. As I said on Twitter last night, I support an old sock, a sock puppet, like sock puppet 2024, if it's a sock puppet versus Bob Ferguson. So I really want Semi-Bird supporters to know that. I mean, they're calling me a Democrat online and a socialist. And it's like, wow, that just tells me you're not interested in having any sort of dialogue. And that's also a very leftist mentality. Mm-hmm. Like the left is the one that's supposed to be demanding purity of everyone and attacking the moderates. That's what you see from the socialists, the democratic socialists, the uber progressives, you know, the pro Hamas faction. They attack the moderates of their party. They're doing that today. We can talk a little bit about that. And then now we have the right that's been making fun of the left for that for so long. And the extreme right's like, oh, Brandy's a socialist and a Democrat. Why? Because I support like a lifelong conservative? Come on, that's just absurd. And if you're doing that, I just can't take you seriously as a human being, honestly. So anyway, this weekend was crazy. So there was a GOP convention. And this year, as you know, it was going to operate more differently in an effort to unite the party. They decided that the party would do official endorsements. There was like 2,000 delegates that came from across the state. And for all the key races and individual, you know, district races, they were going to have an official endorsement. And what that means, or was supposed to mean, is that the person who got the official endorsement in any given race, they would have, the party would solely support them through the primary. So they would, you know, any sort of funding, help fundraising or anything like that, the party, it's basically is not going to recognize any other candidates that continue to stay in the race. And GOP candidates were asked to sign a pledge that says, if I don't get the endorsement, I'll drop out before the filing deadline. So the idea was to unite the party together, to have a united front moving toward the primary and not have this Republican infighting that distracts from the bigger picture, right? Which is eliminating one party rule in the state of Washington. Well, that didn't work. And I will say, if you were hoping for unity at this convention, you didn't get it. The first inkling I got that things were going downhill, and I'll share a picture here, was Jamie Herrera Butler, former congresswoman who voted to impeach Trump, and now the Trump wing of the party despises her, which I'm sure is not a surprise to her. So she's running for commissioner of public lands. We've had her on the show to talk about her campaign. And she shows up to give her speech in front of the delegates. And I guess I'm not terribly surprised that a big chunk of them stood up and turned their backs to her. Some were yelling rhino at her and some were chanting Trump. And honestly, I saw that and I'm like, children. I was like, really? And some people in the room, were, when I criticized this, were like, Brandy, this is America and that's free speech. I get it. I believe in free speech, but it doesn't mean you have to act like an ass. You know, you're talking about candidates who agree with you on 90% of things. But because Jamie Herrera Butler, after a long record of tried and true conservatism, voted her conscience and voted to impeach Trump and then moved on from it, you're going to like boo and hiss at her when she has the balls, not literally. I mean, who knows these days, I guess, but to stand up there knowing that there are people in the room who just hate her over the Trump impeachment and to still stand up there and talk about why she wants the job of Commissioner of Public Lands. And I mean, a big chunk of the room to turn their backs to her and to boo and hiss. So when that happened, I was like, Dave Reichert shouldn't be there. That's what I thought in my mind, is like, he needs to leave. He needs to leave because I could see how it was devolving into a non-serious convention. And I think beneath a candidate who has such a strong moral compass. And I thought, if not for anything, to stick up for Jamie, he should get up and walk out. And I had tweeted as much. Well, then I found out not long after I had tweeted that Dave hadn't actually been at the convention. He was sort of waiting to see how the gov endorsement thing was going to work. He decided, given the chaos, and I'll get to more of it in a moment, that he was going to withdraw his name from consideration. So Dave Reichert sent out a tweet saying, in the past 24 hours, it has become clear that some in the Washington State Republican Party are in such disarray that they're considering making no endorsement for governor. This after they continually changed rules, broke rules, and twisted the process to accomplish their desired outcome. I'm not here to fix the party, but to fix our broken state. Given these deceptive and dishonest events, I'm withdrawing my name for consideration for the gubernatorial endorsement through this convention process. I'm still seeking the endorsement of Republicans statewide and reconfirm my intention to fight for the state as a Republican all the way to November. My focus continues to be on fixing what's broken and doing what's right. That begins by beating Bob Ferguson. So here's kind of what happened behind the scenes. So it turned out that Semi Byrd, so we kind of knew going into the convention that Semi Byrd's team had done a very good job at securing support from delegates. And I'm going to give him a lot of credit for that. And so it kind of seemed clear that he had more support among the party loyalists and the Trump loyalists. And so going into the convention, it kind of seemed like the GOP was ready to nominate Semi Byrd. Except then there's this vetting process that all candidates have to go through to get the official nomination and endorsement. Well, Semmy Byrd wasn't honest on his application. He did not tell them about, I think, a 1993 larceny conviction, where he admitted, you know, to using his father's Social Security number in an effort basically to defraud a bank. And that came out a few days ago before the convention in the Times. And Semmy Byrd confessed to it, you know, just kind of the latest in a track record of things he's had in his past. So his failure to disclose that made him ineligible by the convention's own rules to receive the nomination and endorsement. I want to play for you a video from the Linwood Times from in the room when it was announced that Semmy Byrd was ineligible to be endorsed by the party. Okay. Oh my God. So dramatic. And so basically the, you know, committee, I don't know who the person was with the party, had said, look, by our rules, he's ineligible. And so they said, we're not going to put up any candidate. This is before Dave had already officially dropped out. We're not going to endorse in the governor's race. And that's the response you heard from the crowd and, you know, the Semmy Byrd crowd. And Semmy Byrd's in the front row egging them on. Come on, Semmy. He's egging them on and he's pointing at the stage. They're calling the lady up there a coward. Come on, really crazy stuff. And I get a couple things. I've promised you guys I'll always call balls and strikes. You know that I support Dave Ryker, but that doesn't mean he's above criticism. Dave should have showed up at the convention. When I encouraged him on social media over the weekend to walk away from the process, I did not realize that he actually didn't show up at all to the convention. That's a mistake. You had people who paid with their own money to go there as Ryker delegates, to support him, to volunteer for him, to sign wave. He should have shown up. And I know he probably expected to get booed and jeers and all of that, but you know, Jamie took her lumps on stage. I do think he should have showed up, shook hands, thanked his supporters, stood at the door. And yeah, if Semmy Byrd supporters wanted to be rude to him, then by all means. So I am gonna knock Dave for that. He should have shown up. But I agree with his decision to withdraw. Given that, that's embarrassing. And all the media coverage across the state was like, oh, GOP convention, like they're just not serious. It was crazy and all that. It makes the party look absolutely incompetent. It made the whole process look unserious. And I actually think it helps Dave to not have the endorsement of that disaster and to have walked away. Because I think he does need to. He's been focused on November and beating Bob Ferguson. And to me, not getting the endorsement, now he can be that more independent-minded person that I think a lot of voters are looking for. So that doesn't bother me. Now, Dave's still in the race, obviously. He didn't sign the pledge. And now there's Semmy Byrd people who are mad, like, oh, Dave needs to drop out. Look, Semmy Byrd hasn't raised any money. He only has donations from 1,700 people in like a 15-month campaign. And Dave's campaign has been much shorter, and he's got like, what, 8,000-9,000 individual donations? So you can't. It's not like, I hate this because I gave my word to Semmy Byrd that I would focus on Bob, and I am going to be focused on Bob. But with, you haven't come out and said, stop attacking people for not agreeing with us. We need to bring all these people along. No, a lot of your supporters have been downright nasty. Downright nasty. And the way that you behaved in the front row, pointing up while this woman was being screamed at and called a coward and just, you know, mean mugging them and saying, this is America. You were egging it on. And that is not how a governor behaves. And so I'm going to say that. It doesn't mean I won't support your campaign if you get past the primary. Because, anyone over Bob Ferguson, 100%. But so all this went down. And it Semmy Byrd actually ended up getting the endorsement. Because through their convention rules, the delegates can vote to bypass the rules. So he was disqualified for not being honest about this bank larceny conviction. The delegates decide to bypass those rules, and Semmy Byrd gets the endorsement. So now we're in a situation, and not just Semmy Byrd, by the way. they endorsed a whole list of Republican candidates in the big races, many of whom I've never even heard of. They didn't endorse Jamie Herrera Butler in the Commissioner of Public Lands race, Sue Keel, I think, Peterson. They endorsed like the more pro-Trump people. I've never heard of her. And I live and breathe in this space. I don't know who that is. It was the same with the OSPI race, Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. They didn't endorse Chad Magandans. They endorsed somebody I've never heard of in my life. So it was like this very anti-establishment movement, which I get it. People feel like they've been let down by the establishment or whatever it is. But going further to the right in a blue state is not, it's not the answer, right? That's not going to help. That's how you end up with a Lauren Culp situation where he loses by 500,000 votes. That's how you do that. So anyway, when I saw how absolutely just embarrassing people acted, I mean, there were videos of like fights. There was a fight between a guy in a Trump shirt who was pushing a Reichert delegate. Apparently that became a police matter or something. Really embarrassing stuff. So I figured, since a lot of the adults in the room were acting like children, I decided to bring on probably the youngest person who was at the convention to give us her perspective on their behavior as a 16-year-old. I'm, of course, talking about Kellyanna Brooking. She's an independent journalist, and she is a Republican. And she went to cover the convention, and so we had her on yesterday on Sundays with subscribers to give her, again, take as a 16-year-old for how these adults acted at a state convention. Jim Walsh, the chairman of the Washington State Republican Party, was on Twitter sort of suggesting, oh, the media is blowing this out of proportion. It wasn't chaotic. It wasn't chaos. How would you describe it, having been there?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, I do like Jim Walsh. I think he did a pretty decent job at moderating without giving in to the crazies, which was nice to see. I think saying it wasn't chaotic is a complete lie, because it very much was. You know, being there and not having to, that's another great thing about reporting, is you don't have to give your opinion. You don't have to align with what's going on. You can just observe and watch and stand back and ask questions. But yeah, the event was absolutely chaotic. And regardless of your opinions on a candidate, Jamie Herrera Butler, I had an opportunity to interview her for a few minutes, and she was sweet to me and it was great. And regardless of your opinions on her, when she went up to speak, people that hated her stood up, turned around, and were yelling at her and booing her and saying, screaming out rhino and calling her these horrible names. Everybody was standing up and turning their backs towards her like literal children. What scares me about that is that these grown adults are registered to vote. These are registered voters that are not mature enough to grasp the concept that somebody can have a different perspective than them. She was literally just giving a speech explaining what the land commissioner does, and they were not mature enough to hear that. It was chaos, especially when the semi-bird news broke out. People were throwing signs, people were screaming, people were yelling and protesting and tweeting and taking, it was insane. And these are registered voters, Brandy, and that's really scary to me.
I love this. A 16-year-old being like, I'm scared that these adults are registered voters. You can watch that full interview with Kellyanna Brooking, who joined us from the convention for Sundays with subscribers, undividedpod.com. But I just think that's a perspective. Like that, for those adults who behaved that way, that's how you came across to a 16-year-old girl who was in the room. That's the example that you set to a 16-year-old Republican. And I've had some variation of, again, oh my gosh, social media was brutal to me over the weekend. It's like, I fight for and agree with like 99% of what you do, but because I have a criticism of your clearly inappropriate behavior, I'm now a Democrat, socialist, like horrible person. Somebody's like, you're gonna lose all your subscribers over this. Okay. Like I said, I think we're gonna be fine, you know? But if I lose subscribers by calling out the behavior of people who I mostly agree with, that I'm more concerned about maintaining my moral clarity than maintaining that. What was I going to say? So there was, one of the complaints people had about my just being aghast at this situation is, Brandy, this is democracy. This is just passionate people who are fighting for to have the voice of we the people heard. It's like, okay, I love that. I love people who are passionate about politics. You don't have to be disrespectful to do that. You don't have to be blatantly disrespectful and absolutely incapable of understanding that there are people who might have reasonable disagreements with you. You don't have to do that while also fighting for your voice and fighting for democracy. So that's just ridiculous. Like, don't give me that line. And I'd also say to this We the People crowd, everyone is We the People. I hate to say it, but even the left-wingers are We the People. That's what this country was built on. The second that you think We the People is some sort of inclusive or exclusive club is the second that you've truly lost, I think, all sense of what We the People stands for. And there's this other, you know, element of this, and gosh, I know I'm just getting into the weeds here. There's this also element of that that bothers me, that you think it's more We the People for 2,000 people to choose who gets to go to the primary than for voters to choose who gets past the primary. That seems counterintuitive to me. All right, so Democrats had a field day with this, and I would, hell. But first, let me just say of Democrats, they're not innocent. We would all be sitting here making fun of Democrats if they had a convention and the left-wing, like, Hamas crowd got up and was shouting at, you know, Kim Schreier, whatever it is, or Adam Smith. I would have been just as disappointed and made fun of their behavior and criticized their behavior as I would. So let's not act like the chaos and the fringe behavior is exclusive to the right. It is far more prevalent on the left in Washington state. But I don't blame them for having a field day with it. Washington Democrats, the Republican Party, is a party of dysfunction and chaos. We see it in Congress with Trump, and we see it right here in Washington with the WAGOP. They're having a hard time endorsing one of two anti-abortion candidates running for governor this year. Bob Ferguson, the contrast in our race is clear this weekend. While Congressman Dave Reichert was quitting the chaotic Republican convention, Nicole, can you pull up the Bob Ferguson thing? The contrast in our race is clear this weekend. While Congressman Dave Reichert was quitting the chaotic Republican convention because things weren't going his way, I was speaking to King 5 about my team's work collecting nearly 3,000 DNA samples from violent offenders. Unlike anti-choice Republican Dave Reichert, I will never quit on you when things get tough. This guy, first of all, the guy who just, he doesn't fight for you. He just stays quiet. He stays silent when it matters most. And I started this running list on Twitter of all the things that Bob Ferguson never spoke out about. And he just stayed silent because it was politically palatable. And now he's saying, I won't quit on you when things get tough. No, you'll just retreat into your little safe space and just try to not say anything that'll offend your voting base. Just absurd. But you notice Bob Ferguson, he's not attacking Sammy Byrd. He's attacking Dave Reichert. That's because he knows that Dave Reichert is his likely November primary challenger. And look, again, I don't want to act like, I don't care if you support Sammy Byrd. It doesn't change my mind about who I'm supporting. The nomination process doesn't change my mind. I'm not a Republican. Why would I be beholden to a Republican nominating process? Support Sammy Byrd. That's fine. But don't attack people viciously for supporting a candidate who has raised more money from more people, who has near universal name recognition, and who's doing exceptionally well in the polls. Because you're in the minority when it comes to who you support. So don't act like it's some absolute offense or I'm some awful person who you should get on social media and be vitriolic about because I support a candidate who more people support than your candidate. So don't give me that. If you're going to be crazy about it, like, I'll push back against it. So can't put baby in a box. I was laughing. Why can I not speak today?
I don't know. Your struggle.
I was laughing. Did people make fun of me on the live chat about cyclical? Cyclical. Listen, yeah, cyclical. I'm smart, I promise.
They pointed out what you're trying to say, but.
Yeah, cyclical. Thank you, guys. You know I've had 6 concussions. I blame it on the concussions. That's protect fair. Your noggin, children. Protect your noggin because you need it later
Wear
in life.
Wear a helmet.
I was laughing because, like, I had said on Twitter, I don't care who gets past Bob or who gets past the primary. I'll support a sock puppet over Bob Ferguson. And this left winger is like, who are you kidding, Brandy? Of course you'll vote for the right wing extremists no matter what. And then this, you know, right winger was like, oh, Democrat Brandy Cruz. And I was like, mental health professionals need to start advertising their services directly on X because they'd get a ton of clients if they do that. Like, insane to me
none
how
of them will seek help.
It's insane to me how the people on the right behaving like that think that they're somehow different or morally superior to people on the left who behave like that. Just crazy. No, I'm not going to kowtow to you because I don't want you to cancel your undivided subscription. I value every single person who subscribes to this show, But I'm not going to act like, because most of my subscribers are on the right, I'm not going to excuse completely inexcusable behavior. And I'm not going to, you know, choose my words more carefully because I'm criticizing the right and because that could cost me money. The freaking day I start to do that is the day I need to quit doing this and retire and do something else. So I don't know who you think I am, but I'm not kowtowing to anyone of any political persuasion because they want to bully me on social media. Give me a freaking break. All right. If you are in the market to sell your home this year, get an early start on making sure it's ready to hit the market. Get those cosmetic upgrades done. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, he can help you with all of that. They can manage those projects. They can even pay for it up front. And then when and if the Fed drops interest rates, your house is ready to go. They've already got all the marketing material ready. They got the pretty pictures and the video, and you can take advantage of that rush. Wes says when, and again, when or if the Fed drops interest rates before the election, that is going to be a nice, a good time to list your home.
If they drop interest rates, that's going to be a nice little rush, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, we're having a rush right now. And when rates drop, you know, assuming that they do, it's going to pick up, you know, even more. And if you want to take advantage of that, it's probably a great time to start that conversation right now. You know, whether you want to sell in the later in the spring, sometime in the summer, or even the fall. If you want to sell in 2024, you know, we're here to start a conversation with you.
Yeah, be ready for the rush. So reach out to Wes Jones and heck, reach out to a few real estate agents. Ask them what they offer you that nobody else does. And I promise at the end of the day, you're going to see that Wes Jones and his team have an innovative marketing strategy. They have services you're not going to find with a traditional real estate agent. Wes is going to start by giving you a free market analysis. He'll come out, he'll check out your home, give you some advice on what you need to do. And you can start on their website by just using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, as we mentioned earlier, we are awaiting the outcome of the U.S. Supreme Court hearing arguments on a case that really could change the landscape in a positive way or in a negative way around homelessness and the response that cities, especially on the West Coast, take to dealing with homelessness. And I don't think that I have to remind you all what's at stake here. This is quite literally a life or death issue. And we are seeing it every single day. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So while you have these federal court rulings that have in some cases helped and in some cases hampered the ability of local jurisdictions to decide how they want to address the homelessness crisis, so while all this is being worked out, you have some cities that are really struggling to get people on the streets help before they die. There's really no other way to put that. And Berrien, we've had on the mayor, Kevin Schilling, who's just awesome, you know, lifelong Democrat, has been very frustrated with the government bureaucracy and the layers of politics that have, in his estimation, hindered his ability to help prevent people from dying in tents on the streets of Berrien, on the sidewalks, in the parks. So you'll remember the whole, it's still ongoing, the whole tit for tat between King County and Berrien. So Berrien is in King County. They use the sheriff's office. They contract with the sheriff's office for their law enforcement services. And Mayor Kevin Schilling and the city council decided to pass an ordinance that gave them more power to tell people you can't camp here. You can't do it. And then the King County Sheriff's Office and the political appointee sheriff said, oh, we're not going to enforce your ordinance. We think it might be unconstitutional. Not only are we not going to enforce it, we're going to sue you over it and let a judge decide. That's the lengths that King County government and the King County brand of politics and progressivism, that's the lengths they're going to stop a city from trying to save people's lives. And that is what this is about. So Kevin Schilling, he tweeted that they lost another person in a tent in Berrien to a drug overdose. He said, sadly, the city of Berrien added to this toll last night. Speaking of, there was an article out about the three states with the most drug overdoses. Anybody? Anybody? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Washington, Oregon, California. What do they have in common? Oh, the exact same political climate? Yeah. So Kevin Schilling said, sadly, the city of Berrien added to this toll last night. A man overdosed in the city hall library bathroom. We continue to have the county executive and county sheriff not enforce any of our public camping laws, leading to continued deaths on the streets. And this isn't the first time that there's been an OD related to the homelessness crisis in Burien since the sheriff's office said it wasn't going to enforce the ordinance. Burien News had an article out. Since Dow Holt's Burien camping enforcement, second homeless death in 3 weeks. Another homeless man died in Burien. This makes 4 overdoses and 2 deaths since the King County Sheriff's Office refused to enforce Burien's camping emergency regulation. And they're blaming King County, and I agree. I agree. In this case, that's whose fault it is. So you've now had, again, 4 overdoses, 3 total deaths. There was the 2 previously. The mayor just announced the 1, not only in a tent, not just a homeless person, but a homeless person who's living out in those camps who OD'd in City Hall in a bathroom, City Hall library bathroom. That's unacceptable. And it's their point that if you weren't as the political class in Seattle, you know, preaching to us from the mountain high about how we should deal with the homeless crisis on our streets, these 3 people would be alive. And to be clear, the people who have first and foremost responsibility for their lives are the people who are putting those drugs in their bodies. I'm not going to act like it's the government is more to blame than them. No, this is an individual decision, whatever decisions you made that led you down a path where you're shooting up fentanyl or whatever, trank in a tent or in a City Hall bathroom, you bear responsibility ultimately for dying from it. However, in a progressive area that pretends that this is about empathy, to be so unempathetic that they would take a city to court to keep people living on the streets, that's what I have an issue with. That's insane. And so this, again, you know, and we've seen the video, our friend Jonathan Cho has covered this quite a bit, of what's happening in Burien. This is not a big city. So to have homeless tents lining just the sidewalks in a small area, their downtown is just a small area, the impact that has on businesses, on public safety, on quality of life in a small city like that is huge. And imagine how helpless you feel as the mayor to say, we're trying to do everything we can, but we have a county executive and his political appointee sheriff throwing roadblocks in our way every step when we're just trying to get people off the streets to make sure that they don't die. Frankly, I don't know who has to sue or what they have to sue over. Is it the family members of one of these people who died of ODs? I don't necessarily agree with that route, but I don't know how to wake up these Seattle or Seattle-like politicians who don't see that this isn't empathy by any stretch of the imagination. And again, maybe it goes back to money. Maybe it goes back to, gosh, we get so much money that we get to put toward homelessness that we actually just dole out to our political cronies or to DEI groups so we can brag about how we gave money to, you know, BIPOC groups to deal with this, and then we never hold them accountable. We just did a story, covered a story that PBS, local PBS covered of a guy who was supposed to be running a homelessness nonprofit for at-risk homeless youth who now has to pay back $330,000 that he misspent. Yeah. They don't want the gravy train to stop. So they're not interested in fixing it. And they're not interested in having mayors like Kevin Schilling be able to fix it either. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action. Oh, sorry, I guess that's my throat. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Hold on, I got to take a sip of my... What a struggle train today. And now I'm out of water. Now what else going to happen next time I have something in my throat?
It's going to be a long week, even though it's a short week.
Oh my gosh. You have no idea, you guys. I love each and every one of you. But if I am not, if I don't make it to Florida, I might lose my freaking mind. I might lose my mind.
I might too, actually.
Yeah, I might lose my mind.
I Nicole's need you to, like, go to Florida.
I need you to disappear. I have encouraged you guys over and over to take the First Mark Challenge because it's just such a no-brainer to me. It honestly takes an hour of your time. You can save money and for years to come, be confident that your family has the right insurance and that you're properly protected, and it costs you nothing. So that's why I say over and over, it's a no-brainer. What the First Mark Challenge entails, as an insurance broker, you know, they have a lot of, they're not a captive broker, so they have a lot of different companies that they can choose from and go out and seek the best insurance for you and try to get the best price. So what the First Mark Challenge entails is you come in and, or you do it virtually too, or on the phone. You talk to them about your insurance needs, where you need to be. Maybe you need to save money. Maybe you need better insurance. They're going to go out, shop the market for you, and come back with their recommendations. Again, and you never pay First Mark a dime for their services. I'll tell you, I have, especially since we're moving into a new studio, I've been making phone calls and having First Mark look into some business insurance. It's a game changer. It is a game changer. If you are doing your insurance yourself, you know, going to the big box carriers or something, I'm telling you, there is a better way. And First Mark Insurance is it. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they've got your best interest in mind. All right. I don't even know how to get into today's unbelievable because we're just going to have to play the video. But Gavin Newsom, who already has put out a lot of deeply dishonest and disingenuous political ads across the country, this one takes the cake. This is dishonest and fear-mongering even by his standards. Let's talk about it in our segment. Freaking believable. So Gavin Newsom, who's still, last check, pretending he doesn't want to be president of the United States, he's just waiting for old Joe Biden to croak. And then he's going to come in like the white knight and be like, oh, I didn't want it. I didn't want it. But thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. So he puts out, I don't know, is this with his own money? Is it his campaign funds?
It's some Democratic group.
He's run ads in Florida against Ron DeSantis, which when Ron DeSantis was like, seemed like he was on his path toward being the Republican nominee some time ago. And then Gavin Newsom was saying he didn't want to be president, but then he's running ads in Florida against Gavin Newsom. Super weird. So this ad has to do with abortion and abortion restrictions in Alabama. Just watch it.
We're almost there. You're gonna make it.
Trump Republicans want to criminalize young Alabama women who travel for reproductive care.
Miss, I'm gonna need you to step out of the vehicle, take a pregnancy test.
Stop them by taking action at righttotravel.org. Campaign for Democracy Group is responsible for the content of this advertising.
You guys. I don't even know. I'm not sure how to respond to that. And Gavin Newsom tweeted this out. Like, look, you know, I know some of you don't like it, but I'm pro-choice within reason. Like, okay, within reason. I get that there may be maybe being hyperbolic, you know, and saying, oh, take a pregnancy test. And I'm not saying that political ads on either side are free of hyperbole. But to suggest that cops in Alabama are out there patrolling the roadways, pulling over women and asking them if they're going to get an abortion or knocked up is a level of deceit and fear mongering that I'm just continually depressed that we've reached in this country. And that can't. Again, as someone who's pro-choice, and it's mostly because government interference, and I believe in limited government, I, within reason, think women should be able to make their own medical decisions, but that would make me less likely to support the group or the entity that put that out. It rises to that level of dishonesty. No one believes that women are being tracked down by the Alabama State Patrol and pulled over to see if they're going to another state for an abortion. At the beginning of this ad, the friend's like, we're almost there. Like they're approaching like the state line or something to freedom, you know, abortion freedom. We're almost there. We're going to be fine. Then boop, boop, cop in the thing. So like A+ for creativity, but also shame on you, you know, also shame on you. It's absolutely unbelievable. The fear mongering around abortion, around now gay marriage, because they cannot defend their policies on other key issues that are actually impacting many, many Americans is pretty wild. But let's see if it's effective. It was damn sure effective in 2022. Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State, shall we? Have you guys heard what's happening at Columbia? This is wild. I cannot imagine being a Jewish American. Well, really, being Jewish anywhere in the world right now, Israel, obviously.
But I just cannot imagine sending my child to some of these public schools, some of these universities, where anti-Jewish animus has proliferated and been allowed for, and they've been covered. You would never have, before I get to this, you would never have this level of tolerance for any other sort of hate. Like, if you had at Columbia right-wing Nazis out there marching with swastikas and doing Heil Hitlers, and they were students, they'd be expelled the same day. The same day. And you'd have the president, and you'd have Democrats out there, and wall-to-wall CNN, MSNBC, and rightfully so. If you had anti-LGBTQ groups, like gays against groomers or something, on a campus, like protesting against child transgender surgeries, and they, some of them were students, they'd be expelled in an instant. But somehow these colleges and these schools don't treat blatant hate against Jewish people the same, blatant anti-Semitism, because they couch it in, oh no, this is just pro-Palestine. Or they couch it in, oh, we're just anti-war. No, some of this stuff is blatant. In fact, the school walkout, is that today or is that in a couple days?
I think it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow. They had this flyer out that I tweeted out. I didn't pull it for the show, but that mentions Kim Schreier, who's Jewish. I don't know if you knew that. And it talks about how, oh, shame, she's pro-Israel. She's Jewish. And they go to, like, I think the only reason they go to Starbucks is because Howard Schultz is Jewish. So when you're targeting Jewish people, Jewish-owned businesses, Jewish entities with your hate, that's anti-Semitism. Clear as day. So anyway, there was just a horrible anti-Semitic issue at Columbia. And it's in Columbia decided to not only like, oh, it's, you know, let's stand by. They've caved to the mob by their response to it, rather than do what, again, they would do if it was any other sort of hate. Their response is to go to remote learning. Because that's how you're going to keep Jewish students safe, is, oh, let's just, everybody learn from home. Everybody learn virtually. This is from our friend Ari Hoffman. Columbia caves to the mob. Rather than arresting and expelling terrorist supporters on campus, Columbia is going to remote learning. And he makes that same point I just made. He said, if there were activists hurling anti-LGBTQIA or racist slurs, they would be booted off campus immediately and charged with hate crimes. But they don't care when the mob is targeting Jews. Now, the president of Columbia University sent out a statement and said, you know, he said, I'm deeply saddened by what's happening on our campus. Our bonds as a community have been severely tested in ways that will take a great deal of time and effort to reaffirm. Students across an array of communities have conveyed fears for their safety, and we have announced additional actions that were taken to address security concerns. And then he says this, to de-escalate the rancor and give us all a chance to consider next steps, I'm announcing that all classes will be held virtually until Monday, virtually on Monday, so today. Faculty and staff who can work remotely should do so. Essential personnel should report to work according to university policy. Our preference is that students who do not live on campus do not come to campus. You have to be kidding me. That is your response to a left-wing anti-Semitic mob that you acknowledge is making Jewish students on campus fear for their safety. You would never tolerate that sort of harassment, that level of fear that was brought about by some right-wing group of neo-Nazis. But because the far left has a hold over our institutions, you treat this with kid gloves and you couch it in, oh, you know, support for Palestinians and innocent Palestinians and children. When these groups have long, long since stopped couching it that way, it's just anti-Semitic. It's anti-Israel. So Columbia University with a lesson on how not to respond to a mob that is seeking to disrupt business as usual. And you just gave them a major win. Shameful. All right, this is interesting, and I wonder if you guys feel the same way. There is this from NBC News. There's a new poll out that says interest in the 2024 presidential election, so the rematch between Trump and Biden,
has dropped to an all-time low. So this is an NBC News poll. And it says, so in 2016, Americans who considered themselves very interested in the election, 69%. In 2020, 77%. And in 2024, 64% would characterize themselves as very interested in the election, which is interesting, but I almost think that we're hitting the point of overload. And people don't like, by and large, the two choices. We've seen that in the polling, and it's like, oh, I got a rematch between Old Man River, who can't string a sentence together, and Trump, who's embroiled in all these things, which is a complete distraction. And so I almost think it's this mix of, like, there's a lot of intrigue, right? Because I think people are just not happy with the choices. But even I feel political fatigue a lot lately. And the crazy is just too much for people. I said over the weekend, if this wasn't my job, I absolutely would have tuned out of the GOP convention nonsense and just said, that's not worth my mental health on a sunny day. And I think I'm, that's more, and that scares me because I don't want people who maybe, I think there was an increase in engagement in 2016 and in 2020. I mean, when Trump was president, people could name like cabinet members and actually watched White House press briefings. They were waiting for a train wreck or something, or just found it entertaining. But there was this level of intrigue that the American people had about the political process that I don't think they'd had in a really long time. And now after all that intrigue and just night and day, live and breathe in politics, they're kind of like, eh, I know who these two guys are. I know what they stand for. I'm sort of over it. All right, one more national story quick. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. So Trump's on trial right now, blah, blah, blah. We're not going to cover a lot of that because I'm not a national news show. We'll cover the big developments. But Congressman Jayapal was on MSNBC. And she said, I'm shocked she said this out loud, but she said something that is only going to add to, you know, conspiracies, and I say that phrase really loosely, on the right, that the only reason why Trump is now being pursued for prosecution so vigorously is because he's running for president. And that if he weren't running for president, we wouldn't see some of these prosecutors be so eager to put him in prison. And Congressman Jayapal on MSNBC basically says, yeah, that's about right.
People are scared, and these jurors, I mean, the New York Times wrote about it. The jurors are risking their safety and their privacy to sit in judgment of a former commander-in-chief who is now their fellow citizen.
Right.
A heavy responsibility that could unnerve even the most seen-it-all New Yorkers. That is... take a step back. Like, these people are putting their families' lives on the line.
Yeah,
we don't know their names, but Donald, his lawyers do, and I believe that it wouldn't be out of their own possibility that Donald Trump is at least aware of who some of these people are.
No, that's right, and somehow that it finds its way into the public, which would be terrible. And, you know, I go back to the responsibility of Congress here, because had the Senate actually gone through with the impeachment of Donald Trump, we would not be in this situation. And I remember Mitch McConnell giving a speech that sounded like he was going to vote for convicting, but he didn't.
Why would impeaching him have meant you wouldn't be in this situation where he's being tried for crimes that are completely independent of the impeachment inquiry? Again, that's just admitting that this is a political prosecution. And even if you believe that the Trump did something deserving of prosecution, that's how Democrats are framing it. And there's already been accusations, and I think some evidence to show some of these prosecutors are very, very biased against Trump and just don't like him politically and are seeking to keep him out of office. But in America, you should never prosecute someone criminally for the sole purpose of making sure that they don't become president of the United States. Shouldn't that be agreed upon? Isn't that a very scary place to be as a country, where you have powerful people who hold someone's freedom in their hands, who would seek to put them in prison to stop them from seeking public office? That, I don't know if she knew in the moment how significant what she was saying was, but those two things should not have any correlation. Unfortunately, they very much do. Before we get to comments and our daily subscriber show poll, we had our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital on the show last week, and he was on vacation already in Florida. And we talked a little bit about why so many people in retirement especially decide, besides the weather, obviously that's part of it, but decide to leave Washington State and live out their glory years in sunny Florida.
It's the odd thing about Washington I try to explain to people. If you are a net detractor from the public pot, let's say you're homeless or something like that, you get treated with kid gloves. If you are a contributor to the pot, you get looked at with a side eye and a negativity. And you're just like, wait a second. What other business treats its clients like this, yeah, right? Like, I'm putting money into the pot and you treat me like I'm a scourge. You know, it's just bizarre. You know, it's like biting the hand that I just don't get it. And you're going to keep seeing capital flight. But I mean, that's why, right? Socially, politically, financially, it's all the reasons.
Yep, capital flight. I mean, Jeff Bezos. Didn't I hear Bill Gates also sold his house in Washington? Capital, they were trying to get out of that capital gains tax. But, you know, the tax climate is much better in Florida as well. So those things matter. Those things matter. And those are people who are going to a different state and they're going to spend their savings in retirement somewhere else. I suggest if you're close to retirement even if you're like me and you're just trying to figure out how much money do I need to retire and when can I make it happen? Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they specialize in risk management, especially in this election year with all this global unrest, the markets making no sense in the world. It's good to make sure that you are properly assessing your risk. And Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital can help you do that. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. You can sign up for that at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, before we get to questions and comments, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about the GOP convention, specifically the gubernatorial endorsement. And what I wanted to know is, does it alter who you're going to support in the primary at all because Semi Bird got the endorsement and not Dave Reichert? So the way I worded this poll for subscribers, I said over the weekend, delegates at the state GOP convention officially endorsed Semi Bird for governor. Dave Reichert will remain in the race. Does Bird's party endorsement make you more likely or less likely to vote for him in the August primary, or does your level of support remain unchanged? And what I think is interesting is the vast majority of people taking this poll on Patreon, Locals, and X say that their candidate preference has not changed. And that makes sense, right? It's a non-binding endorsement process of a political party. And so what that tells me is a lot of people outside that process aren't influenced by it in the sense that it would change who they would vote for in August. And that could also mean, by the way, that they support Semi Bird and that they supported him going into the convention and that support hasn't changed and they're going to support him coming out of the convention. Let's see. Ben Michaels, Dave Reichert is a better candidate for our state. I just lost the respect for our caucus. Kendrick Gray says, this is exactly what we want. Democrats won't vote for the person that has the Republican nomination. They will think that person is far too right. They will be looking for a more moderate guy if they are not happy with Bob. This is what we call promote out in the business world. This is the best possible thing for Dave. Gives him a way to appear semi-independent and gives himself a unique platform. And I agree with all of that, for sure. But the question also is, if Dave makes it past the primary, can the party come together? And this process that was designed to unify the party has done the opposite. We are taping an interview for a special week of shows with Jim Walsh, and I look forward to having an honest conversation with him about how all this went. We're also taping an interview with someone who I think benefited from all this quite a bit, and that's Mark Mullett, who's sort of the Semi-Bird equivalent on the Democratic side in that he's been polling low, but he's been fundraising pretty well. He's just hoping that there's this niche opportunity for him, and I'm very curious how he thinks it has improved his chances given all this dysfunction. Dave Keller said, for me, the endorsement from a party is almost a reason not to vote for a candidate. As perverse as that sounds, endorsement by the party, either party, seems to signal a candidate who will be way too far from the middle where any and all progress for our state and nation occurs. And that's a good point because, like, Mark Mullett, who's further to the middle, is also being shunned by his party. So you have the two more independent-minded, moderate candidates who are being shunned by their parties, and that's because party loyalists tend to be further out toward the fringes, at least in this state. And I don't care if you're a party loyalist. Again, I'm not saying that to be disparaging at all. I just don't like when I'm disparaged for supporting someone who is moderate. So it's a two-way street. Okay, some questions and comments. Jeff says, down with Bob, vote sock puppet. I'm telling you, I would. Sock puppet would be more entertaining too. D-Man in Seattle, biggest problem was announcing at the convention decision that Bird wasn't qualified. So dumb. If that were true, it should have been figured out long before. Yeah, but I kind of disagree with that only because they'd done the vetting. Like, he did his, you know, little thing that he had to submit. And then that Seattle Times article came out a couple days before the convention. So that's when they found out about that larceny conviction, was in the Seattle Times article. So that was brand new information for them, where they realized that he hadn't been forthcoming about it.
I do wish they had people looking into these things. Like, why all not candidates. Have somebody vetting each candidate, making sure that they qualify? Looking into the past.
Like the Democrats on line, Clyde Shavers, who mm-hmm. got elected even though he lied about his military service. It's like, holy moly, in 2024, we're not catching these things before, right. You know, it's really wild. I think with Sammy Bird, though, this stuff is really old. And I will say that. This stuff mm-hmm. is old. I believe in redemption, but you have to, in order to be redeemed, I think, and religious people believe this as well, like, mm-hmm. you have to acknowledge what you've done.
Right.
You know, and I don't think hiding it is a sign of being rehabilitated, for lack of a better phrase. Right. It's like, you have to own it and say, man, you know, I learned from my, like, Tara Simmons. How much do Republicans attack Tara Simmons, mm-hmm. a Democrat, for her criminal history? And she's the first felon elected to a state house anywhere in the country. But Tara Simmons has been very outspoken about things she did, about the lessons that she learned. So she comes to voters. I don't like her policies, obviously, mm-hmm. I've talked about it, but she comes to voters like an open book.
Absolutely.
And is very, very forthright with what she learned and from her past mistakes.
Yep.
To me, we wouldn't allow a Democratic candidate to hide or lie about so many things and not go after them with every fiber of our being. So that's what I mean about consistency. Like, the affiliation doesn't matter to me. I judge people by their actions or inaction, and then I'll look at their political party and whether we align. But if you don't have a set moral compass where you set it and then you stay the course and you don't veer from it just because you might agree with someone politically, I mean, that's sacrificing something that should be so sacred to each and every one of us, our morals and our values, for politics. And that can't be where we are. All right, Matthew Cook with a $20 super chat. Wow. We have two parties here and only two. One is the evil party and the other is the stupid party. Occasionally, the two parties get together to do something that's both, this is a quote. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. both evil and stupid. Senator Everett Dirksen, yeah. And I think there are some evil people in both parties. I think there are some stupid people in both parties. I think there are some evil, stupid people who don't belong to either of the parties too. but these are the parties with power, and when they do something evil or stupid, we all suffer as a result.
They're really loud right now.
Oh my God, exhausting. It's exhausting. Oh my gosh. My husband's like, why are people so mad at you today? I was like, because I dared to support a candidate they don't like. I think my husband worries about me. He looks at social media. He's like, geez. Catherine Saw Mueller, talking to people who are not politically involved, none of them have heard of Bird, but will support Dave because they know what his reputation and accomplishments are. Sergeant Pickles with a $4.99 super chat. I will cover one of your lost subscribers. Love the show. Hope to see you both at an event in the future. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know if I've lost subscribers over the weekend, but if you like what we're doing enough to subscribe to the show, but then over one disagreement on politics, you're going to pull your subscription. I would hope that nobody signs on to this show believing they're going to agree with me 100% of the time, because I've been clear, like, I can't pull punches over money. I just can't do it. And then I'd lose all sense of why I do this job in the first place. Kathy Carr, if he was rehabilitated, he would not have lied on his paperwork filing for running for governor. You know, omission, a live omission. Andy Silly, $10 super chat. Riker supporters should show up at his fundraiser in Snohomish on Thursday. Oh, I didn't know he was having one on Thursday. Diana Manning, I sent a note to Jamie's campaign today begging her to follow Dave Reichert's example and stay in the race. I believe she is staying in the race.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't. I think Chad Mogendons is dropping out, which I think is a mistake. Yeah. I don't. When you're talking about 2,000 delegates, you know, these are, again, party loyalists, but they're not necessarily, they're not reflective of who is doing the best campaigning and who can win the electorate as a whole. So I think for Chad Mogendons, he feels like he signed a pledge and that matters to him because he's an honest person, right? And like he gave his word. So I think that's what he's struggling with. But when we're talking about something like the education of our children that's at stake,
would he like us to get together and vote that he doesn't have to abide by the pledge that he had said he would abide
if
more?
I can get, here's the
like
question.
The delegates.
Here's the question, Chad Mogendons. If I can get more than 2,000 people to sign our own pledge saying we pledge to undo that pledge, can we make a deal here? All right, let me see. On abortion, Steve Gordon says, it's actually Gavin Newsom's PAC. Okay, Campaign for Democracy. That was, thank you, Steve. Steve's like, Brandy's struggling to find the connection there. Gavin Newsom's PAC, because I asked where the money came from. Rachel Cisneros says, they are desperate. I can't stop laughing at that ad.
It's pathetic.
That's the thing, is so it comes across as non-serious. So I don't know.
Nothing real.
But when you're running an ad like that, and I'm guessing they spent millions to not only make it, but distribute it. Who are you trying to reach? Because there's no one in the persuadable middle on abortion who's going to look at that and be like, wow, that's scary. Oh,
they're stopping people with pee sticks.
Like, can you pee on this? The unhinged leftists, they might look at that and be like, that's a great ad, but they're already hook, line, and sinker. So I don't know who. Why would you waste an ad, money on an ad that's not going to change any hearts and minds? I mean, by all means, Gavin Newsom. Yeah, throw money away at worthless political ads. All right, one more. Matthew says, the commercial should be California Highway Patrol pulling you over for not using correct pronouns. That's more likely than this silly ad. Yeah, that's very true. All right, we got a fun sanity check to close. Thank you, Nicole. To close the show with today, even a Korean influencer with millions of followers is making fun of the lax squatting laws in Washington State. It's our closing sanity check for today. So I have to laugh that Jonathan Cho found this. So you'll recall the situation going on with the Bellevue squatter, Sang Kim. So Sang Kim has been squatting this house for like 2 years, and he's Korean. And some local members of the Korean community have said it's an embarrassment for them as Koreans. And there's been protests outside his house. He's basically stealing from Jaskaran Singh, who's his landlord. So apparently this story of this Korean squatter has made it all the way to a Korean YouTube influencer, Sayuka World. Jonathan Cho says, this is absolutely glorious. The Korean YouTube influencer has more than 3 million subscribers and just blasted Bellevue serial squatter Sang Kim. As word of this situation spreads across the world, it's even more embarrassing for other Korean nationals being asked about this quote-unquote con man. And then he goes on to some details, but I just thought I'd play, it's in Korean, but you'll be able to pick out a few words in English. Here's a clip.
한국인 Sang Kim 씨가 스쿼트. Oh! 야야야야야야 3대 500원 하는 이거 스쿼팅에서 누운 사람들 스쿼터들은 추방 위기에 처한 불쌍한 임차인으로 봅니다. 하우징 저스티스 프로젝트 저런 사람들을 도와주는 어떤 지원 제도가 있어요. 시리얼 스쿼터 연쇄 스쿼터로 불리고 있다고 합니다. 한국계 언론인 조나단 최 씨와 함께 한다고 하는데 무전무박 노페이 노스테이 겟아웃 컨맨.
So you've got this Korean influencer with 3 million subscribers detailing the very embarrassing situation playing out in the city of Bellevue with serial Korean squatter Sang Kim. I like it. Keep the pressure on. It's the only way that we're going to get these policies changed. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Sorry, we're a little chaotic off the top, but we made it through.
Chaos, it's fine. Chaos.
I think we feel the chaos behind the scenes. I wish there was a live camera streaming what it's like in here in the 5 minutes leading up to the show. But anyway, if you've not signed up to support the show already, please do so. Help us with our mission to give common sense a comeback after this weekend. Lord knows we need it. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here in the live show tomorrow at noon.